This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Next Tuesday is the second annual Charlotte Data Day. This year, the focus will be on housing and how national housing trends are shaping the Charlotte region. This year, the city of Charlotte will be using this data, I believe, to determine whether we have enough affordable or workforce housing, something which has become increasingly problematic as the region has grown. This data should be helpful in determining where we stand on our supply of workforce housing and help to pinpoint where it should be, and in fact, where it is now. Joining us to talk about all of this is Amy Hawn Nelson. She is Director of Research for the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute and Director of the Institute for Social Capital, Incorporated. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Rebecca Hefner is Community Research Manager in the City of Charlotte's Department of Neighborhood and Business Services. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Matthew Martin is back. He is Senior Vice President at the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond and a Charlotte Regional Executive for the bank. The last time you were here, you were here to talk about the Federal Reserve.
That's right.
Is a little different role for you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
We'll talk about why you're here in a second. But as I mentioned, this is coming up on the second annual Data Day, sponsored by UNC Charlotte. What is the purpose of Data Day? How did it start? Why did it start? And why is its focus on housing this year?
So Data Day began as actually a conversation between the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond and UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute last year. We had our first Data Day in March of 2013, and that was a more broad conversation around data and how to use data in the community. We had over 200 attendees from all over the state, actually. It was wildly successful. I'll be honest, it exceeded our expectations. Mm. And so we immediately, as soon as people, before they even left, they said, what are you going to do next year? And we decided to be more focused in the way that we approach day-to-day and decided very quickly that housing is a very important topic in our community right now. And so we have gone forth the past year planning this around housing.
Housing or workforce housing or both?
We look at housing, and when I say we, I mean the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute and the Housing Data Consortium that we hold mm-hmm. at the Urban Institute. We look at housing very broadly, and we include homelessness and affordable housing as part of that. So workforce housing is a component.
And Matthew, I think it probably surprises listeners that the Federal Reserve is participating not only in day-to-day, but in how this fits in with your mission at the Fed. Why is the Fed involved at all?
Sure. I mean, the general trend is we partner in our communities to work around issues like this, and it has to do both with our mission and our structure. So the Federal Reserve's mandate is low and stable inflation. I think most people recognize that. The other side of that is a full employment mandate that we normally interpret as promoting economic growth. But growth doesn't happen evenly across the country. So we want to understand what the issues are in individual communities. Now, the other part of that is our structure. There are 12 regional banks, so the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond is just one of those 12.
Right.
We have a branch here in Charlotte. That structure sort of facilitates us being involved in the communities in which we live and work and trying to understand the issues particular to that community.
So understanding housing and housing needs and where housing is and what it costs and how that cost compares to what the average income is in an area, et cetera, helps to build community. And by building community, you're building the economy. Is that essentially what
it is? I think embedded in this issue, and I should mention the agenda in the program next week is broader than just workforce housing, but that's definitely a key element of it. I think there are some issues connected to that potentially affect economic growth in a region. So there's research, for example, that suggests where people live is connected to access to education, other outcomes in the workforce and in the labor market. Mm-hmm. And those are important, I think, for a region like Charlotte. So we tend to focus on we have very good economic development agencies, the chamber and the regional partnership, and they're often targeting jobs that are sort of higher up on the income scale. But the jobs we're talking about are those that we all come into contact with every day, right? The workers in retail, in doctor's offices, and teachers and police and the sort. That's our workforce. There are a lot of them, and we should be concerned that they have housing that's affordable for them.
Much of this conversation is going to focus on what you discovered about affordable or workforce housing, but the survey that you have, the data that you have collected, is on housing in general, as two of you have alluded, and how how national trends are impacting local housing situation and also shaping the region. So how do you see this big set of data being used in Charlotte?
So I think we have at the City of Charlotte, in partnership with Mecklenburg County and UNC Charlotte, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Quality of Life Study. And one of the dimensions of that study is housing. There's about 17 variables related to housing in that study. And it really covers the broad range of kind of what's the character of housing in a neighborhood, the size, the average price, the change in value, those sorts of things. And what we really promote through that study is use of the data in the community. So kind of this broad range of data, whether it's on workforce housing or housing in general, can be used by a lot of different people and partners in the community.
Well, the quality of life study that you just mentioned, I think, started in the 1930s in Charlotte. Is that right?
In the 1990s.
What? That can't be right. I can't be wrong. But nonetheless, it's been going on for it's been going on
the
for
concern
a while.
About quality of life has been going on much longer than that.
But the principal investigator of that study, who is at UNCC, might be a little upset to know that that study started in 1930.
I don't know where I got the figure 1933, but it's in there somewhere.
1993 was the first year.
All right, well, perhaps that's what I just – never mind. It doesn't matter. It's been going on for a while. So how does the data that you have at your disposal today differ from the kind of data that went into the quality of life studies in the past? There we go. I got it out.
All right. So the quality of life study changed considerably in 2012, and for most of the history of the study, they were really looking at a smaller set of variables. Mm-hmm. And what we have available now is just a really broad range of variables. Some of it is derived locally from kind of building permit data and the data from the code enforcement department. Some of it is derived from surveys from the American Community Survey, for example, that's done by the Census Bureau. And then other data we get through partnership with Housing and Urban Development at the federal level. So there's just a wide range of data available. And one of the challenges that brings up then is how do you make sense of it, and
yeah,
how do you use it when there's so much available?
Do you make sense of it because we have computers today? Could you have done this in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, before computer technology was what it is today?
No.
So computers help.
Computers help, but even beyond kind of the more sophisticated analyses you can do with computers, what really helps is kind of just the broad understanding of what's going on in the community. So being having partners that are involved and engaged, and being able to connect housing to other dimensions of quality of life, so jobs and
so
people.
And
if I can jump in real quick, two big things. So this study, the quality of life study, used to be on paper. It was this huge report, hundreds of pages, very expensive to produce and release and disseminate. And then in 2000, and the geography was different. It used to just be a small part of the city of Charlotte, and then it became the city of Charlotte, and then it brought into Mecklenburg County, which is, I think, the geography piece is a big story, part of the 2012 change. The other change was that the county came on board and funded this to become a web platform. So we not only changed, and when I say we, it's a broad partnership between the county, the city, and UNC Charlotte. And the platform changed, the geography changed, the variables expanded. It kind of became this whole new world.
Yeah, and I went on the website yesterday. You have these dashboards out there where you can drill down from the county at large right to individual neighborhoods. So I checked on my neighborhood yesterday.
It's usually the first thing people do when they go on.
And we encourage everyone to do that. It's QOL dashboard. If you just type it into Google, you can do it right now.
It's QOL for quality of life.
QOL dashboard. Put it into any Google. Nope, just put into Google. It'll pop up.
Okay. But having that data accessible on the dashboard like that, it really has changed how people can use it because they can get right to it.
So as I went through it yesterday, I thought, this is all very interesting but not useful to me because I'm not a developer. I'm not going to open a store. I'm not going to – I don't know. But it could be very helpful and useful to a lot of different people. Who do you see using these dashboards and getting information that's important to them?
I can speak not as a researcher but as an active member of our community. My husband's actually on our neighborhood board. Uh-huh. And so we live in East Charlotte in a smaller neighborhood. And we actually use quality of life study all the time for our neighborhood. Almost every meeting we have a discussion of some kind of variable. You know, this is where our community is. This is where we'd like to go. And I've gotten some feedback from some other neighborhood leaders around town that they use it similarly. So that's not really from a research perspective, but more as a community engagement, you know, guiding goals perspective.
And in neighborhood and business services, we really promote that as kind of one of the primary uses that we work with neighborhoods, neighborhood leaders and neighborhood boards around how to use that data and what it means and how they can use it sort of to create a common understanding of what's going on in their neighborhood and then to use it as a basis for attracting resources and investment.
And one of the I went through a lot of this yesterday, not all of it because it would take a year, Rebecca, housing prices in Charlotte seem to be bouncing back from the Great Recession, and the availability of housing along transit lines, at least along the Blue Line corridor in South End, seems to be increasing. There must be thousands of apartments that have suddenly just popped up overnight. But I would bet that one of the impacts of transit on that housing is decreasing affordability. Is that the case? This new housing can't be inexpensive.
Yes. So I can't speak directly to that point, but I can tell you we'll be talking a lot about it at Day-to-Day next week. And yes, we've seen decreasing affordability because there's an increase in property values along that line, both because of the changes in zoning that have allowed more dense development, but then the type of development that's taking place. Those apartments are not going to be affordable to the workforce housing population that we're talking a little bit more about today.
Let's define this, because we've interchangeably used affordable housing and workforce housing. Are they one and the same thing?
I don't know if they're the same thing. Certainly, workforce housing is, to my mind, an element of affordable housing. I think in the broader community, when you say affordable housing, I think we have evidence from some planned communities that had public hearings. You put affordable housing attached to a project, and the public perception might be this is people all in public assistance, as opposed to this is families and people who are working who need housing that's in their price range. Mm-hmm. And so I think the affordable housing term probably is a little bit loaded in the community. And by trying to talk about workforce housing, we're at least trying to address that this is an issue for people who are going to work in your community, and it'd be best if they could live close to where they work.
So are you saying that the term affordable housing has gotten some negative connotations attached to it over the years, and if we change the name of it to reflect who actually lives in these houses, who needs this sort of housing, that people might warm to the idea? Because it's working.
Right. Or more broadly.
Trying to make a living.
Yeah, or more broadly, help people in the community to understand what the issues are, right? So I think that's part of the hope for Day-to-Day is that we'll get some of this information out and we'll help to change public perceptions around.
And we'll talk about some of the people who need this housing as we go through this half hour. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Birdhouse on the Greenway, celebrating fathers with gift selections of squirrel-proof bird feeders, binoculars, and bird guides. The shops at Piper Glen next to Trader Joe's, bringing people and nature together. BirdhouseOnTheGreenway.com. Well, we are halfway through the year, and already Charlotte Mecklenburg Animal Care and Control has taken in over 12,000 dogs and cats. The challenge they face, of course, is finding homes for these animals, which is especially difficult because of A, limited resources, and B, the existence of puppy mills and breeders, and it's also difficult for them to get some pet owners to understand how to treat their pets responsibly. So we'll talk about that and examine the state of pet welfare Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor's surprising loss. At a congressional hearing, Secretary Hagel defends the Bo Bergdahl prisoner exchange, and a judge rules California's teacher tenure law is unconstitutional.
Join the News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Data Day, which is next week, D-A-T-A Day, Data Day, which is next week. It's a project of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute and the Institute for Social Capital, and the director of research for that organization, Amy Nelson, is with us. Rebecca Hefner is also here, community research manager in the Department of Neighborhood and Business Services for the City of Charlotte, and Matthew Martin with the Federal Reserve Bank, Charlotte Division of the Federal Reserve Bank in Richmond, Virginia. The Urban Institute, the City of Charlotte, the Foundation for Carolinas are all involved in this because the Foundation for the Carolinas gave funding, I'm told, to develop some of this. And also the Affordable Housing and Homeless Data Consortium housed at the university is part of this. One of the outcomes, I'm told, of this funding was the point-in-time survey, which we talked about a few weeks ago on this program, which took a snapshot of the homeless population in a point in time, literally one day, in January, I think it was. Has that funding also impacted the data that was collected on housing in Charlotte? This is all part of the same rigmarole here?
Well, it's connected. So in 2012, the Foundation for the Carolinas provided UNC Charlotte with a community catalyst grant, and they funded some initial work to figure out, okay, here's a problem in our community, housing. How can we collect data to begin to approach solving this problem in a more purposeful manner? And so what came out of that grant was something called the Affordable Housing and Homelessness Data Consortium. It is based at UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. Mm-hmm. And we hold data from different partner agencies, government agencies around town to try to help researchers address this problem. So part of that work was the work from the point-in-time count. And the author of that was Ashley Williams, who's a staff at the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. And that's part of a broader effort around all of this. There's a lot of people in the room, a lot of people at the table, trying to figure out what data do we need to solve this problem, and then how, once we have the data, which we're very close on this, we've had a lot of community involvement, a lot of pushing and, making this happen, we almost have that part of it complete. And so now we're at the stage of, okay, we have the data. What can we do with it?
So the data is about all kinds of housing in Charlotte,
yes,
from multi-million
very
dollar
homes. Very holistic definition
to
of housing.
But let's talk about affordable or workforce housing, because as we were talking about a minute ago, the image of that sometimes has negative connotations, and it's important for people to understand who uses and who needs this sort of housing. You point out, Matthew, that most of the people with whom we come in contact every day, most of them cannot afford to get into rental housing. That just floored me, to be honest with you. Much of it, you say, is out of range for retail salespeople, nursing aides, and wait staff at restaurants.
That's right. So we're talking mostly about rental housing here, because most home ownership in the Charlotte area by a vast amount is single family. So look at median prices there and what a typical mortgage would be. It's going to be higher than rental. Mm-hmm. It's not – they're measures of distress. So it's the idea is that it's not affordable in the sense they're going to expend a disproportionate share of their income to secure housing in a lot of cases.
So these are not deadbeats, as sometimes people are associating affordable housing with deadbeats, people who don't work or don't want to work or who have been on the dole for years. These are working people with whom we do business every day. Has it always been this way, or is this a trend?
So I think there's probably always been some element of it. I think part of this is recognizing that labor market outcomes are outcomes from one market and housing market outcomes are different. And you have, we could get into the factors about why there's not enough housing supplied at this end. I think someone's already mentioned things like regulation, some other things that come into play here. So it's not necessarily the case, at least in the short run, you're going to have outcome in housing and labor markets match up very precisely. So I think that's the first thing to recognize. And I think, importantly, it's probably going to be a growing problem if you look at projections for population and the occupations that are likely to grow over time in the Charlotte region.
Which begs this question, I think. Does the fault lie in the price of housing or in what people, employers, are willing to pay employees? And if all we have is these hourly low-wage jobs, if that's all we've got, where are these people supposed to live?
So if this particular segment's on housing, I'd love to come back and do another show on the labor market outcome and skills development process. That could be a show by itself.
Okay.
On the housing side, I think there are, and we have others around the table here that might be able to talk more about this than I, you frequently see things that are done with the best interest of the community in mind that end up reducing the supply of more affordable housing. This could be zoning restrictions. It could be codes, building codes that increase the cost of building. And I've heard builders in Charlotte mention this, that the when you improve the codes, you do raise the cost of building. So you sort of raise the minimum floor for which a builder can build and charge rent. So there are factors like that that come into play that I think are present in Charlotte.
Rebecca.
Yeah, and I think, it's the easy out answer, but the fault really lies in the gap between wages and the fair market cost of housing. And so you have to be able to think through policies that will move both of those things towards the middle. So if you have 20% of all jobs in Mecklenburg County pay minimum wage or around minimum wage, but the fair market rate of a two-bedroom apartment is about $15.50.
Yeah, according to statistics you supplied us, the National Low-Income Housing Coalition calculated these figures for the Charlotte metro area. The hourly wage needed to afford, at minimum, a studio apartment, which means no bedroom, the living room is the bedroom, at its fair market value, rent, which is about $622 a month, what you have to make to afford that is $11.96 an hour. Minimum wage is $7.26 an hour. That means it would require a person working 1.6 full-time minimum wage jobs to afford a studio apartment. Now, a lot of people do work two full-time jobs. That's why.
Well, they have to.
Do employers know this? I'm just checking. I don't know about whether you know the answer to this question.
I don't know the answer to that question, but I think employers do know that.
Those against raising the minimum wage know this? This is not a political – I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying they may not know this.
So you raise a good point. I think it's in the interest of business to understand the housing options of their workers and where those are. So if you're a business operating in one area of town and there are places in Charlotte where there aren't as many rental options, your workers may have to come from some distance. So I think
why do I care? If I'm Walmart, and not to pick on Walmart, but if I'm a big box store or if I'm a local employer that needs hourly wage earners or I run a restaurant, why do I care that they don't live around the corner, that they have to come, if my restaurant is in Ballantyne, that they have to come from East Charlotte? Why do I care?
Most businesses benefit from a stable workforce, and whatever type of business that may be. And if you want your employees to show up to work on time and be there on the days that they're scheduled, then it's beneficial to you to make sure that you're locating in an area where your employees at all levels have access to stable housing.
I'm going to go back to your figures for a second. Given that only 20% of rental housing in Charlotte rents for less than $600 a month, that prices out, you say, all food preparation employees, almost all healthcare support personnel who make an average of $11.29 an hour. So if our impression of what affordable housing is and who needs it were to change, would that impact the supply? Or is it always going to be affected by economics? If times are good, the supply is low, rents will rise. I mean, how do you and this is out of the purview of your data collection, but how do you fix this?
The one example that comes to mind is, I recall a few years ago, a proposed development that had an affordable housing component. And I guess by requirements, they had a public hearing, and people in the area showed up and were very vocal about
not in my backyard.
Right. So then the question becomes, well, then where do you build this? So you had a developer lined up who was going to build a housing project that had an affordable component, and ended up backing out because of the local citizens' concerns.
Did people understand that these are the people that draw our blood when we go into a hospital, or these are the people that are serving us at a restaurant?
That teach our children. Care for our children while we're working.
Do they understand that's who these people are? Because if they understood that, wouldn't they be more open to providing mixed-use development? I'm just asking the question.
I hope we're sending that message now. Okay. And that's part of the reason for this event next week, and hopefully we can make this information more widely.
I mean, you work with this kind of data every day. Does it surprise you? Do these figures surprise you at all? Did they surprise you when you first discovered it? Because obviously you know these things, so it's old hat to you.
They're surprising to me every day, even when I know them in and out. It's surprising to me. The challenges that families and households face in finding housing that's safe and affordable in their budget, and also finding a place in the community to live. That's one of the issues, is where is housing more affordable, and then can they access jobs, and where does transit go? I mean, one of the challenges with housing is just it's complex and interrelated with everything else. But, yes, I think it's surprising every day.
Well, you know, one of the things that they said about the Lynx Blue Line, and they were right about it, is that people would ride it to work, and that development would spring up around it so that people could have access, easy access to it, and maybe not have to use a car very often. And that's happened, particularly along in South End. But then that's not workforce housing, is it?
Not anymore,
because some of the workforce housing was gentrified or pushed out or bulldozed for apartments. I'm not pointing fingers or being mean here. It's just that it's a fact of economics, right? So how do you plan transit lines that will help people who are in need of workforce housing, so that when you put those transit lines in, as we expand the blue line to the north, how do they stay where they are?
And
take advantage of the transit.
And I think you're hitting on a key point, and this is part of what the Urban Institute, the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute does, is we try to connect the dots. You know, housing policy is education policy, is transportation policy. You can't isolate one. All the policies are completely interconnected. Mm-hmm. But there are – I want to come back to the question you posed a minute ago. Do people know about this? There's a nonprofit agency here in Charlotte, a very large one, Crisis Assistant Ministries,
right.
And they hold a what they call a poverty simulation, and they invite different members of the community to come, and they actually have had quite a few success stories from this experience that they create for people. In fact, one company, after going through this poverty simulation, actually changed their schedule for some of their employees based on the bus schedule. So that's a simple fix that could really make a big difference to a person, you know, who has transportation needs and they don't have a car. You know, link that to childcare and everything else. You know, that little change at the you know, business level could mean a big difference for a family. One example.
Prior to the recession, when Charlotte was just booming like there was no tomorrow, we talked a lot about scarcity of affordable housing here and throughout the region, as a matter of fact. Has it gotten worse or with the recession and now the comeback from the recession? Because the housing market, if you want to buy a house right now in Charlotte, it's hard because the inventory is low. So is that driving the cost of affordable housing back up?
Again, I think affordable housing is more about rental. Uh-huh.
If you can't buy a house and you're in a rental unit, right. you have to stay in the rental unit.
That's right. And prices for both have been going up since the recovery has really taken hold. My sense is, and I don't know, hopefully next week we'll see some data that might support this. My sense is that when you talk to those involved in the housing business, whether it's multifamily or single family, that there's more going to the middle and upper end right now as far as new development. Mm-hmm. Now, you could down the line, you could have more affordable housing when you build a higher end apartment place, but then others, that sort of substitutes for others and you start to see less upkeep in other places, and they sort of drift down the affordability. So you could have older projects that way. So what really, in part of what I'm saying is what matters is the overall development of the housing stock in a region does ultimately impact affordable housing, whether it's initially built as affordable or not.
And one of the trends that speaks to your point around it, I think, is that affordable housing used to be something that we put into communities all in one place.
Like projects,
yes. So as communities discovered that that might not be the best way to do things, and we started to then change the approach towards more mixed income developments. So we lost units that were affordable, mm-hmm. As we changed that approach. And so then you lose a lot of units at once, and then they come back more slowly because you're doing them in mixed income environments. And if there's still a stigma attached to affordable housing and people are saying, no, we don't want this, they don't realize these developments look different than they used to.
Yeah.
They look just like the places next door.
First Ward is a good example.
So you could walk right through First Ward and not know that there is a considerable percentage of housing in there that's affordable, mm-hmm. that development was partially financed with housing dollars.
Yeah.
So I think part of the trend is that the units come back more slowly than what we lost. And so right now we really do have that significant undersupply.
In addition to understanding who these people are that need this housing because of their income levels, even though they are working as hard as they can and probably harder than anybody in this sitting at this table, it's also important, I think, to understand the numbers that we're talking about. And according to the most recent data, in Mecklenburg County, 46% of renter households and 26% of owner households are what you call housing cost burdened.
Yes.
What does that mean?
So that's a standard measure around affordable housing, which is that households should be spending really no more than 30% of their income on housing.
And these people are spending more.
So if you spend over 30%, you're considered housing cost burdened. And there are some households, of course, that pay more on housing by choice. They want to live in a particular neighborhood, or maybe they've chosen to pay a little more and are willing to take a cut somewhere else in their budget. But the vast majority of people, particularly renters that are cost burdened, are in need of lower cost housing options and are just unable to access
And nearly 50% of those people who are renting are in that category. How does that stack up with other metropolitan areas around the country that we know about?
So I can say that there was a recent article, and I am mental blanking on the publication, but there was a recent article that came out about cities where projected job growth didn't match the housing development and how that's going to increase prices and impact affordability. And Charlotte was on that short list.
I want to talk about area median income, a term that I was unfamiliar with. I kept seeing the abbreviation AMI and thought, what does that mean? I even Googled it and couldn't find it, but we'll explain it here when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and One Voice Chorus, Hollywood Squares, Divas, June 19th and 20th at Charlotte Ballet. This year, Gabe Bingo's Verifying Divas joined for a night of grown-up game show fun and music. Ticket info at onevoicechorus.com. It's Friday. That means it's the weekly news roundup on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock. In the first hour, the national hour, among the topics, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor's surprising loss this past Tuesday. At a congressional hearing, Secretary Hagel defends the Bo Bergdahl prisoner exchange, and a judge rules California's teacher tenure law is unconstitutional. Those and other topics in the national news at 10, the international hour at 11. And if you'd like to join our conversation about workforce or affordable housing, WFAE.org/CharlotteTalks is a good place to start, or go to Twitter or Facebook. And we're coming right back.
Public Radio goes to the ends of the earth to bring you the heart of the story. We're on the ground and in the mix, even in harm's way. Through conflict and chaos, we investigate, examine, and explore. We don't rest until every side gets their say. The world is a complicated place. Public Radio delivers vital news from every corner of the globe.
Stay connected with global and local news throughout the day on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Rebecca Hefner, who is Community Research Manager for the Department of Neighborhood and Business Services for the City of Charlotte. Amy Hahn-Nelson is Director of Research at UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute and Director of the Institute for Social Capital, and they are sponsoring with several other organizations Data Day next week, which will deal with housing in general, and a very large subset of that is what we're talking about today, and that is workforce or affordable housing. And Matthew Martin is with us. He's the Senior Vice President of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond. We explain why the Fed is involved in these kinds of things. It's for the economy. It's to make sure that we understand all the forces at work in the economy and what keeps us healthy or not healthy. And before we talk about area median income, I want to share with you a comment that came in from Colin on Facebook. In my humble opinion, unless the study recognizes or the data recognizes that quality, the quality of life study recognizes that quality of life is drastically different for a single income family versus dual or multiple income families, then the results are more or less moot. Until recently, with furlough, I've worked two times as many hours as most with no quality of life improvement and detrimental health returns.
So I think it's an important consideration, especially as we trend in this country towards more single wage earning households, or even single households. You know, as people retire and they may not be wage earning, but we have more single households now than we've ever had in the past.
Even in the 1940s and 50s.
Well,
when mom didn't go to work.
No. So I'm thinking through sort of the recent trends.
Okay.
And you know, one point about the quality of life study related to that is we're really trying to put data out there, and we understand that we don't define quality of life. The people who are living in neighborhoods do, mm-hmm. and that's why we try to provide a really broad range of data. Some people may value one thing over another. I call it choose your own quality of life. You can go in and say, here are the things that are important to me, and then look around the community and see where those things are.
Okay. If I read your study correctly, one of the results of the recession, which lowered housing prices in the sale market, actually drove up prices in the rental market because more people were moving out of their homes that they couldn't afford, or they were being foreclosed on and had to have a place to live, and that caused the rental supply of housing to decrease, and therefore the prices went up. And I guess this made the stock of affordable housing increase. So where do we stand today?
So I think you're starting to see the supply response. That is, more projects to build additional units coming online. I think that's part of it. I think, you know, obviously more supply should helpfully at least lower the gains in rental prices. I think it's going to take a while, though. The fact that that we went through a recession, that there are a lot of households whose credit's been impaired, who probably are still, you know, not fully employed as they were before the recession.
And if you've been foreclosed on, you're not going to get out of rental housing anytime soon.
That's right. So it's the healing process is not going to happen overnight.
We are seeing more supply come on the market, but I think one of the things we have to remember is that this issue doesn't necessarily have a market solution. So part of the issue around workforce housing is we need to invest more as a community in the production of affordable housing units.
And as a community, what do you mean? Do you mean developers, or do you mean the city of Charlotte, Mecklenburg County? What do you mean?
The public investment. And the city of Charlotte certainly invests a significant amount. There is a lot of federal dollars that flow through Charlotte and Mecklenburg County to go towards affordable housing. For one of the issues that Matt brought up is about people accepting it in their own neighborhoods. But yes, we need to increase the public
investment. Does the state have a role to play in this, or is this pretty much local, county and city? Nobody knows? Okay, that's fine. You don't have to know the answer to every question.
I do think businesses and business leaders have a role here as well. They have a vested interest. In many cases, it's their workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not at that point yet, but you could see if an economic recovery and growth in Charlotte continues, a point where it becomes harder to find workers to fill these positions. And housing might be a part of why it's hard, and so if you can, as a business, solve that problem, mm-hmm. you have a better chance of getting the workers you need.
I think a key piece here that we have to remember is that we don't just need affordable housing. We need a diversity of housing types. So we need rental properties. We also need different levels of single-family homes. We also need to be more possibly build more duplexes. That's something that our community hasn't done a lot of. In fact, I would even venture to say there's a little bit of a stigma against some duplexes, which is interesting to me. But we need all of these things. We need them mixed in together. And a lot of that comes from neighborhood support. The NIMBYs, as we've mentioned, the not in my backyard. That is a part of all of us. We all live in this community, at least around this table, and we all have a piece to play in this discussion, because we're talking about affordable housing in every part of the city, not just one part of the city.
The greatest need for affordable housing is for people making less than 30% of the area median income. Where would that place their income? Anybody know?
About $19,000.
Which is more than I made in my first job. A lot more.
It was a long time ago.
Is that adjusted?
Thank you.
Is that adjusted for inflation?
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I truly appreciate it. It was nice having you here. So talk to me about this area median income.
Yes, area median income is that acronym of AMI that you see kind of everywhere. If you read anything about housing, you're going to see AMI written over and over and over. So what we generally refer to as AMI, I'm going to mess up this number. I believe it's 46,000 is area median income for a family of four. Is that
64,000?
I'm sorry, 64,000. 40. Okay. 64,000. I reversed my numbers. Great. Glad I'm in charge of a database.
Yeah. 64,000. And we started in 1933, so it's just a trend.
So 64,000 for a family of four. Now, that's quite a significant amount of money. I'm an educator. I've been in the nonprofit world for a long time. That's a lot of money. So we're talking about that is area median income, and then you look at the different divisions. So 60 to 80% of AMI, or area median income, is what we consider kind of workforce development AMI. That's the amount of money that we need. And then we have
That's like 38 to 51,000.
Yeah. So 38 to 51,000. And then we have what this probably isn't the best term, but it's a term a lot of our listeners will be familiar with, is the term of kind of working poor. And that's generally 30 to 60% AMI.
And that's the 19,000 and up range.
And the reason I brought up the fact that's more than I made in my first job, and it was a long time mm-hmm. ago, is that a lot of people look at those numbers and they think, that's a heck of a lot more than I made in my first job, and I did just fine, thank you very much. These people don't need help. But times have changed, inflation has risen, and we don't see it because it creeps.
Mm-hmm. And wage growth hasn't kept that same pace as fair market housing rates mm-hmm. have. And if you're making minimum wage, you're making around $15,000 a year. So compare that to even 30% of AMI, which is $19,000, mm-hmm. and that's for a family of four.
So now you mentioned that we need affordable housing all over the area. There needs to be every neighborhood needs a diversity of housing types. Do we have that now, or is affordable housing pretty much concentrated in one or two or three or four areas pocketed around the city and the county?
I mean, we generally have pockets around the city, mm-hmm. is the short answer. We have certain communities that have hardly any affordable housing, and then we have certain areas of our community that we have quite a bit.
And part of it is related to the size of housing. So when you're looking, you know, there's a significant a number of people who rent single-family homes. We're not just talking about multifamily rental units. So when you look at the different sizes and as you look across the community, by neighborhood, we tend to have very similar housing all in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so when you look across the community, we are really tend to have more affordability in some pockets than others.
How would you describe the bulk of what is now considered to be affordable housing in terms of the character of those apartments or developments or whatever we want to call them, their access to transit, their access to jobs, their access to grocery stores? Because when we talk about food deserts, mm-hmm. much of that is in lower income areas where this affordable housing is, and yet they don't have access to healthy food. How would you describe most of these affordable housing units that we have today?
I mean, generally speaking, just from to put a face and a picture with these numbers, I mean, you're describing an individual who would need affordable housing is someone who works full-time, mm-hmm. sometimes two jobs, as you've described. They most likely don't have a car, or if they do, it's a car that's not in the best of shape, so sometimes they might need a bus. They may share a car. This person most likely lives in an area of town without a lot of access to grocery stores, as you've described. There are quite a few food deserts in our community. If there is a grocery store or way to buy food, it's generally a higher price with lower quality goods. This person is most likely living in a unit that was built in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. This is not going to be newer housing. It's not going to be incredibly well-built housing. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have a lot of noise, you know, quite frankly, that these aren't the best built units. Right. These aren't how we previously had a lot of housing in our city that was built in the 30s and 40s, which actually was better built. The construction wasn't as good. So, I mean, think of how all those pieces of this affect quality of life.
And the access to child care in a lot mm-hmm. of cases would be another barrier.
Okay. Bill Saint, who is the president of the Charlotte Home Builders Association and also of the fine building company. The biggest benefit, he says, to affordable housing today that no one speaks about is the incredible affordability for home ownership. No one is doing the math and waking up to today's reality. For example, a $150,000 home with 10% down at today's mortgage rate of 4% is only $644 a month, principal and interest. Of course, there's taxes and insurance to pay on top of that, but nonetheless, that's what it is. Let's not forget that there's a tax benefit to this as well, he says. Compare this to the days of higher mortgage rates, not even thinking of double digits. If the rate had been 7 instead of 4%, the payment would be $898 a month. This means today a $150,000 home costs 39% less than if it were at historically higher rates. Are the people that we're talking about who are paying $622 a month absolutely unable to pay $644 a month for a house that they can own?
I understand the reader's comments, but I would kind of push back a little bit. I have a home I just had to buy a new HVAC unit for. So that was $4,000 out of my bank account. So I think what we're talking about isn't home ownership. We can't just look at this as a cost of, you know, $600 a month and it's, you know, pay this versus this. It's so much more than that. I mean, home ownership is a lot of money and it's a lot of risk. And quite frankly, a lot of the individuals that we're talking about don't have the credit or don't want to have the credit or can't take on that credit load for a variety of reasons that we've talked about.
There are agencies in Charlotte, nonprofits, and I'll mention one, Community Link, and full disclosure, I'm on that board, that will put people working, people that are in the ranges we're talking about through a homeownership program, at the end of which they'll say, okay, we've gone through, we've taught you about mortgages and we've looked at your budget. you're sort of ready for home ownership or no, you're not. Work on these things to get yourself ready. And then they'll also work with builders, to your emailer's point, mm-hmm. to get them in a starter home that is in the affordable range. So there are communities and homes that are accessible, not necessarily to all that we're talking about in some of these lower AMI.
The quality of life study that we talked about earlier points out that businesses relocating to an area consider the cost of living and the overall quality of life, I'm quoting here, and want to make sure that the average wage worker can find an affordable place to live that is accessible to the job so that the workforce will be stable. Given some of the battles over wages that we've seen at some major corporations in recent years, is that really true? I'm sorry to question the basic fact there. Is it really true?
I think the wanting to ensure they have a stable workforce is true. I think it's likely that understanding housing and the community may be one factor of very many that companies and businesses consider. So I wouldn't say that that's their primary focus necessarily, depending on the company. But I think it is true that a stable workforce benefits businesses.
You can't force developers to develop mixed-use housing. I guess you could through policy. If you want to build on this tract of land, you have to have some affordable units on this tract of land. That's the only way to do it, isn't it?
And we do have some initiatives here in Charlotte that are doing this. So we have some affordable housing that blends in affordable housing rates with market rate. For example, there's a great mixed income community called Brightwalk that's not far from where we are right now. And that's would be a model for our community. And some would suggest that that model needs to be replicated in many different parts of the city.
Okay. And right now, those kinds of things are incentive-based. You can get density bonuses, for example, for developing mixed income housing. But there's no mandatory policy that you're talking about that would require it.
We're talking about affordable housing today because it's part of the housing study conducted by the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute and other organizations, and it will be part of Data Day next week, the second annual Data Day, which will deal with housing overall. You've been able to divide the city into 464 neighborhoods, and that information is available online in dashboards, so you can go to any neighborhood in the city, including your own, and really find out about many different factors of the composition of your neighborhood and the surrounding area. I want to thank Matthew Martin for the Federal Reserve, Rebecca Hefner with the City of Charlotte, and Amy Nelson with the Urban Institute at UNC Charlotte and the Institute for Social Capital for the Hour. Thank you all very much.